In a land far, far away, there was a mighty kingdom called Arcalore. The kingdom was large and full of life, with green forests, tall mountains, and long rivers that sparkled like diamonds in the sunlight. The people of Arcalore were happy and hardworking. They loved their land and respected their king, King Arcalion, and his queen, Queen Alara. The royal palace stood on a high hill in the center of the kingdom, shining brightly with its tall towers and beautiful gardens. The people looked up to the palace every day and felt proud of their kingdom. The king and queen were known to be kind rulers, always making sure their people had enough food and were safe from harm. However, there was a dark cloud hanging over the kingdom. King Arcalion and Queen Alara had been married for many years, but they had no children. The people of Arcalore worried about the future because they wanted a strong leader to follow King Arcalion, but no heir had been born to the royal family. The king and queen felt sad about this. They had tried many things to have a child. They prayed to the gods, asked wise men for advice, and even brought healers from faraway lands to help, but nothing worked. The palace halls, which were once filled with laughter and joy, now felt empty and quiet. Every day, Queen Alara would walk through the palace gardens, her heart heavy with sadness. She would watch the birds and the flowers, wishing she could hold a baby of her own. King Arcalion, who loved his wife dearly, did everything he could to make her happy. But deep down, he was also filled with worry and fear. Who would take care of the kingdom after him? Even though King Arcalion ruled with strength and wisdom, the worry of not having an heir never left his mind. His advisors, who were wise and experienced, also began to grow concerned. They would gather in secret meetings, discussing what might happen if the king and queen did not have a child. Who would sit on the throne? Would the kingdom fall into chaos? The days turned into weeks, and the weeks turned into months. But still, no child came to the royal family. King Arcalion and Queen Alara continued to rule the kingdom with love and fairness, but the sadness in their hearts grew deeper with each passing day. As more time passed, King Arcalion became filled with despair. He loved his queen more than anything in the world, but he also loved his kingdom. He wanted to protect his people and ensure that Arcalore would always have a strong leader. Without a child, he felt powerless. One evening, as the sun set behind the mountains, King Arcalion sat alone in his royal chambers. The room was grand and filled with treasures from all over the world, but the king didn't feel comforted by them. His heart was too heavy. He poured himself a cup of wine, hoping it would ease his mind. The king rarely drank, but tonight, he needed something to help him forget his worries. As he sipped the wine, his thoughts grew darker. He imagined the kingdom without a ruler, with chaos and fighting among the nobles. Who would take the throne if he and the queen never had a child? He feared that without an heir, the kingdom he had worked so hard to protect might fall into ruin. As the night grew later, King Arcalion drank more and more. His mind became foggy, and his heart ached with sadness. He thought of Queen Alara, how much she longed for a child, and how she, too, must feel the weight of this sorrow. But no matter how much they tried, the gods did not bless them with a baby. The king's mind drifted further, and he began to think that perhaps it was his fault. Maybe the gods were angry with him. Maybe he had failed in some way. He didn't know the answer, but the thought gnawed at him, filling him with guilt and despair. Meanwhile, the royal advisors were becoming more and more concerned. They gathered in secret meetings in the palace, whispering about the future of the kingdom. Lord Ferris, the king's chief advisor, was the first to speak. "The king has been troubled for too long," he said. "Without an heir, we must start thinking about what will happen when King Arcalion is no longer with us." The other advisors nodded in agreement. They, too, were worried about the future. Arcalore was a strong kingdom, but without a clear heir to the throne, it could easily fall into chaos. The nobles might start fighting over who should rule, and that would only bring war and destruction. "We must find a way to help the king," said Lady Corinne, another advisor. "Perhaps we can seek out new healers or wise men from other lands. There must be something we can do." Lord Ferris frowned. "We've already tried that," he said. "The queen has seen every healer and wise man in the land, but nothing has worked. The gods have not blessed them with a child, and we don't know why." "Then what can we do?" asked Sir Edwin, one of the younger advisors. "We can't just sit and wait for disaster." The room fell silent as the advisors thought about their options. They knew they couldn't force the gods to grant the king and queen a child, but they also couldn't stand by and do nothing. "We must be prepared," Lord Ferris finally said. "We must plan for the future, even if that means considering other options for the throne." The other advisors looked at him in surprise. "Other options?" Lady Corinne asked. "Do you mean?" Lord Ferris nodded gravely. "Yes. If the king and queen cannot have an heir, we may need to look for another suitable ruler. We must protect the kingdom, no matter what." The advisors were uneasy at the thought, but they knew Lord Ferris was right. The kingdom of Arcalore was too important to be left without a leader. They would do whatever it took to ensure the safety of the kingdom, even if it meant finding a new ruler from outside the royal family. One cold night, King Archelion sat alone again in his chambers. The fire crackled in the hearth, casting shadows on the walls, but the warmth of the flames did little to comfort the king. He was deep in thought, and once again he reached for the wine. As he drank, his mind wandered to the heavy burden he carried. The people expected him to be strong, to be a leader, but how could he be a leader if he couldn't even provide an heir to the throne? His heart ached for Queen Alara, who was so kind and loving, yet they were both cursed with this sadness. As the king continued to drink, the world around him grew blurry, and his thoughts became less clear. He felt lost and confused, as if he were trapped in a dark tunnel with no way out. At that moment, a palace servant named Mara entered the room. Mara was a kind and gentle woman who had worked in the palace for many years. She often brought the king his meals and tended to his needs. Tonight, she had come to check on him, as she had noticed his growing sadness. "Is everything all right, Your Majesty?" Mara asked softly, her voice full of concern. The king looked up at her, his vision hazy from the wine. "No, Mara," he said, his voice heavy with sorrow. "Everything is not all right." Mara stepped closer, worried about the king. She had never seen him so sad and lost. "Is there anything I can do to help?" she asked. King Archelion sighed. "There is nothing anyone can do," he said. "I am a failure. I cannot give my kingdom an heir, and I cannot give my queen the child she so desperately desires." Mara didn't know what to say. She felt sorry for the king and wanted to help, but she didn't know how. As she stood there, she noticed how lonely and broken the king looked. In that moment, a strange feeling came over her, and before she knew it, she reached out and touched his arm gently. The king, in his weakened and drunken state, looked at Mara, and something inside him stirred. Perhaps it was the wine, or perhaps it was the deep sadness in his heart. But in that moment, the lines between right and wrong blurred. He leaned closer to Mara, and she, too, was caught up in the moment. That night, the king and Mara, the palace servant, shared a secret that would change their lives forever. Several weeks passed after that fateful night, and Mara continued her work in the palace. She tried to push the memory of that night out of her mind, telling herself it was just a mistake, a moment of weakness. But something inside her told her that things were not the same anymore. One morning, Mara woke up feeling unwell. Her head ached, and her stomach churned. At first, she thought it was just a passing illness, But as the days went on, the sickness didn't go away. In fact, it got worse. Mara began to worry. She had seen other women in the village with these same symptoms, and she knew what they often meant. But she didn't want to believe it. She couldn't be pregnant. Not like this. Not with the king's child. Her heart raced as she thought about what this could mean. If anyone found out, she would be in terrible danger. She was just a servant, and the king was a powerful ruler. What would Queen Alara do if she learned about this? What would the people think? Mara didn't know what to do. She was scared and alone. She couldn't tell anyone about her secret, not even her closest friends. For days, she kept her worries to herself, hoping that somehow, this was all just a mistake. But deep down, Mara knew the truth. She was carrying the king's child, and there was no turning back now. Mara couldn't keep her secret for long. One day, as she was working in the palace kitchen, she suddenly felt faint and had to sit down. Sibel, an elderly woman who worked in the palace and was known for her wisdom, noticed Mara's pale face and tired eyes. She had seen these signs before and quickly realized what was happening. "Child," Sibel said softly, pulling Mara aside, "you're not well. What's troubling you?" Mara hesitated, her heart pounding in her chest. She didn't want to tell anyone, but Sibel had always been kind to her, and Mara trusted her. After a moment of silence, Mara whispered, I think I'm with child." Sibel's eyes widened in surprise. She had suspected as much, but hearing the words confirmed her fears. "Does the father know?" she asked gently. Mara shook her head, tears welling up in her eyes. "No," she said. "I can't tell him. It's the king." Sibel's face grew serious. "The king?" she whispered. "Oh, child, this is dangerous. If the queen finds out..." Mara nodded, wiping away her tears. "I don't know what to do," she said. "I'm so scared." Sibel thought for a moment, then placed a comforting hand on Mara's shoulder. "You must leave, Mara," she said firmly. "You must leave the palace, leave the kingdom, and go somewhere far away where no one will find you." Mara's heart sank. She didn't want to leave the only home she had ever known, but she knew Sibel was right. Staying in the palace would put both her and her child in great danger. "Where will I go?" Mara asked, her voice trembling. Sibel thought for a moment. "There is a kingdom to the east, a place called Drifer," she said. "It's far from here, and no one will know who you are. You can start a new life there, raise your child in safety." Mara nodded, knowing she had no other choice. She had to protect her child, no matter what. Over the next few days, Mara began preparing for her escape. She couldn't leave right away, as that would draw too much attention. She had to be careful and plan her departure quietly, so no one would suspect anything. Sibel helped her, offering advice on how to travel safely and what to take with her. "You'll need food and water," Sibel told her, "and warm clothes for the journey. Drifer is a long way from here, and the road can be dangerous." Mara nodded, trying to stay calm as she packed her things in secret. She gathered a few coins she had saved over the years, along with a small bundle of clothes and some food. Sibel also gave her a few extra supplies, things that would help her survive the journey. Every day, Mara grew more nervous. She had never traveled far from the palace before, and the thought of leaving everything behind was terrifying. But she knew she had no choice. If she stayed, the truth would come out, and she and her child would be in grave danger. As the day of her escape grew closer, Mara spent her time saying quiet goodbyes to the people she cared about. She didn't tell them she was leaving, but in her heart, she knew this was the last time she would see them. She would miss the palace, the people, and the life she had known, but she had to protect her child. Finally, the night of Mara's escape arrived. The moon was hidden behind thick clouds, casting the land in darkness. It was the perfect night to slip away without being noticed. Mara waited until the palace was quiet, until the servants had gone to bed and the guards had changed shifts. Then, with her heart pounding in her chest, she quietly slipped out of her room and made her way to the palace gates. Sibel was waiting for her near the stables, holding a small lantern to light the way. "Are you ready?" she asked quietly. Mara nodded, her hands trembling as she clutched her small bundle of belongings. "I'm ready," she whispered. Sibel handed her a small bag of food and a water flask. "Take this," she said. "It's not much, but it will help you on the road. Be careful, and may the gods watch over you." Mara thanked Sibel, her eyes filled with tears. She didn't know if she would ever see the kind old woman again, but she was grateful for everything Sibel had done for her. With one last look at the palace, Mara climbed onto a horse that Sibel had prepared for her. Then, without looking back, she rode off into the night, her heart heavy with fear but also with hope. Mara traveled for many days and nights, riding through forests, across rivers, and over hills. The journey was long and difficult, but she didn't stop. She knew that she had to reach Dreifer before anyone realized she was gone. As she traveled, Mara thought about the life that awaited her in this new kingdom. She didn't know anyone there, and she would have to start over from nothing. But at least she would be safe, and so would her child. After what felt like weeks of travel, Mara finally reached the borders of Dreifer. The land looked different from Arcalor, greener and wilder, with tall trees and winding rivers. The people she saw along the road seemed friendly, and Mara felt a small sense of relief. She made her way to a small village on the edge of the kingdom, where she found an old, empty cottage. It wasn't much, but it would be a place to call home. Mara settled into her new life quietly, keeping to herself and avoiding attention. She worked in the village, earning enough to survive, and as time went on, her belly grew round with the child she carried. Finally, the day came when Mara gave birth to her child. It was a stormy night, with rain pouring down and thunder rumbling in the distance. Mara was alone in her small cottage, lying on a bed of straw, when the pains began. For hours, she struggled through the pain, her body racked with contractions. She had no one to help her, but she was strong, and she knew she had to do this for her child. As the storm raged outside, Mara gave one final push, and the baby was born. It was a boy with dark hair and bright eyes. Mara held him in her arms, her heart filled with love and relief. She looked down at the baby and smiled through her tears. "Katonios," she whispered, "that will be your name. You are my son, and I will protect you with all my heart." As Mara cradled her newborn son, the storm outside began to calm. The rain slowed to a gentle drizzle, and the thunder faded into the distance. It was as if the world itself had been waiting for this moment, the birth of Katonios. But as she gazed at her son, Mara noticed something strange. On Katonios's tiny chest, just below his collarbone, there was a mark. It was small, barely noticeable, but unmistakable. It looked like the outline of a star, glowing faintly in the dim light of the cottage. Mara's heart raced as she touched the mark with trembling fingers. She had seen this symbol before in the royal palace of Arcalor. It was the sacred mark of the kings, a symbol said to be passed down only through the bloodline of the royal family. Mara's mind swirled with questions. How could this be? She had known the king was the father, but this mark, it was more than a sign of his lineage. It meant something deeper, something powerful. Suddenly, a loud knock echoed on the door, startling her. Mara's heart jumped in her chest. It was the middle of the night, and no one ever visited her at this hour. She wrapped Katonios in a blanket and quickly stood up, her legs trembling beneath her. The knock came again, harder this time, as if whoever was outside was growing impatient. "Who is it?" Mara called out, her voice shaky. No answer. The silence hung in the air, thick and menacing. Mara's breath quickened. She knew she couldn't let anyone see the child. Not yet. Whoever was at the door could be a danger to both of them. The knock came once more, this time louder, almost as if it were a command. Mara stepped closer to the door, her heart thundering in her chest. She reached for the latch but hesitated, her hand hovering just above it. Then, from outside, a voice, low and filled with urgency, whispered through the wood, "I know who you are, and I know what you carry. Open the door or it will be too late." Mara froze. The voice wasn't familiar, but it carried with it a sense of dread, as if the speaker knew her darkest secret. Her hands shook, torn between opening the door and protecting her child. The storm outside had stopped, but inside Mara's mind, a new one had begun. Someone knew. Someone had found them. But how? And what did they want with her son? Before she could decide, the latch on the door began to turn on its own. Kotonios grew up in the peaceful kingdom of Drefer, far away from the royal palace of Arkalor, where his true story began. Drefer was a land of tall mountains, lush green valleys, and sparkling rivers. The village where Kotonios lived was small, nestled in a valley with humble cottages made of stone and wood. It was a quiet place where everyone knew each other, and most people worked as farmers or shepherds. From the moment Kotonios was born, his mother, Mara, devoted her life to keeping him safe. Though she carried the heavy burden of her secret, the truth of who Kotonios's father was, she focused on giving her son a simple, happy life. She never told anyone about the mark on his chest, the star-shaped birthmark that connected him to the royal family of Arkalor. To everyone in the village, they were just Mara and her son, living a quiet life like everyone else. As Kotonios grew older, he became a curious and energetic boy. He loved to explore the forests and hills around their home, always searching for adventure. Mara watched him with pride, but also with a sense of worry. She knew that one day, the truth about his identity might come to light, but for now he was safe in Drefer. The villagers were kind to Kotonios and his mother. They were welcomed into the community, and over the years, they formed strong friendships with the people around them. Kotonios especially loved spending time with the village's blacksmith, a man named Orin, who always had fascinating stories to tell about far-off lands and brave warriors. Orin often let Kotonios help him in the forge, teaching him how to work with metal, a skill that would later prove useful in ways Kotonios couldn't yet imagine. But life in Drefer wasn't always easy. Mara worked hard to provide for them, taking jobs wherever she could, sewing, mending clothes, and helping in the village fields during harvest time. Kotonios, despite his young age, did whatever he could to help. He was always eager to learn and always wanted to make things easier for his mother, who had sacrificed so much for him. When Kotonios was about 5 years old, Mara realized that it was becoming harder to support them both on her own. She had grown weary from years of hard work, and though she was still young, the weight of her secret and the constant fear of being discovered had taken its toll on her. So she made the difficult decision to ask for help from a family she trusted, Gareth and Elyra, a kind couple in the village who had three sons of their own. Gareth and Elyra were happy to welcome Kotonios into their home. They were generous and loving people, and they treated Kotonios as one of their own. Their sons, however, were not as kind. The eldest, Rorin, was tall and strong, and he often teased Kotonios for being smaller and quieter than him. The middle son, Tavin, was clever and quick-witted, but he always found ways to make Kotonios feel left out. The youngest, Leoric, was about Kotonios's age, but even he seemed to follow his older brothers in teasing their new foster brother. Mara was still a big part of Kotonios's life, visiting him every day and making sure he knew she loved him. But now she had help raising him, and that made her feel a little less burdened. She only wished that the brothers would be kinder to Kotonios. Over time, she noticed how they began treating him differently, but she didn't know just how deep their jealousy would grow. At first, Kotonios didn't mind the teasing too much. He was a naturally positive boy and tried his best to get along with his foster brothers. He wanted to be friends with them to fit into the family. He worked hard to prove himself, whether it was helping Gareth with the sheep or practicing the things Orin had taught him at the forge. But no matter what he did, it seemed his foster brothers always found a reason to look down on him. The seeds of jealousy had begun to take root. As Kotonios grew older, life in Dreifer became more complicated. He was no longer the small, curious boy who spent his days exploring the forests and learning from Orin. Now, as a young teenager, he was expected to help more with the daily tasks that kept the village running. His foster father, Gareth, taught him how to care for the sheep and work in the fields. Kotonios learned how to build fences, tend to the crops, and mend the tools that were used in the village. Despite the hard work, Kotonios found joy in learning new skills. He especially loved working with his hands, and every chance he got, he would visit Orin at the blacksmith's forge. Orin, seeing how eager Kotonios was to learn, began teaching him more advanced techniques. Kotonios learned how to make simple tools and weapons, how to shape iron, and how to work the bellows that kept the forge hot. Kotonios also spent time learning to read and write. Alira, his foster mother, believed that education was important, so she made sure Kotonios had access to the village's small collection of books. He would often sit by the fire at night, reading about distant lands and the great heroes of old. He dreamed of one day going on adventures of his own, though he had no idea that his destiny would lead him far beyond Dreifer's borders. But as Kotonios grew stronger and more skilled, so did the jealousy of his foster brothers. Roran, Tavin, and Leoric couldn't understand why their father seemed to favor Kotonios. To them, he was just an outsider, someone who didn't truly belong in their family. They didn't see Kotonios as a brother, they saw him as competition. The jealousy that Roran, Tavin, and Leoric felt toward Kotonios grew with each passing year. It wasn't just the fact that their father seemed to give Kotonios extra attention. It was also the way Kotonios had become a skilled blacksmith, how people in the village spoke kindly of him, and how his natural charm made him well-liked by everyone, except them. Roran, the eldest, felt the most threatened. He had always been the one people looked up to in the family, the one expected to take over the farm one day. But now, with Kotonios around, Roran felt like he was being pushed aside. He began to bully Kotonios more often, finding any excuse to criticize him or make him feel small. Tavin, who was always the clever one, used his wit to humiliate Kotonios whenever he could. He would make sarcastic comments or play tricks on him, all while pretending to be innocent when their parents were around. Leoric, the youngest, followed his older brother's lead, even though part of him sometimes felt bad about it. Kotonios, for his part, tried to rise above the bullying. He didn't want to cause trouble in the family, and he knew that if he fought back, it would only make things worse. But deep down, the constant teasing and exclusion hurt him. He missed the days when he could explore the forests freely, without the weight of his foster brother's jealousy hanging over him. Mara noticed the tension in the family and worried for her son. She knew that the brothers' resentment was growing, but she hoped that, in time, they would come to accept Kotonios as one of their own. Little did she know, their jealousy would soon lead to something far more dangerous. One summer, a terrible famine struck the kingdom of Dreifer. The crops that had once grown tall and green began to wither in the fields, and the rivers that had flowed freely through the valleys dried up. The people of Dreifer had never seen such hardship before, and the entire village was gripped by fear and uncertainty. Gareth and Alira's farm was hit particularly hard. Without enough water and food for the animals, many of their sheep became sick and some even died. The family struggled to make ends meet, and tensions within the household grew even worse. Roran, Tavin, and Leoric were quick to blame Kitonios for their misfortune. "You brought this upon us," Roran spat one day, as they worked in the dry, dusty fields. "Ever since you came into this family, things have gone wrong." Kitonios, though hurt by their words, knew there was nothing he could say to change their minds. The famine was beyond anyone's control, but in their jealousy and frustration, his foster brothers had found a convenient scapegoat. As the famine dragged on, the village became desperate. People began to trade what little they had for food, and rumors spread of families leaving Dreifer altogether in search of better lands. Kitonios knew that things were only going to get worse. Then, one day, while the family was sitting together at dinner, Roran made a suggestion that sent a chill down Kitonios's spine. "We need to think about our survival," Roran said, his voice cold. "There's not enough food for all of us. Maybe it's time we made a difficult decision." The table fell silent as everyone looked at him. Tavin nodded, a sly look in his eyes. "Maybe we don't need all of us here to survive." Kitonios glanced at his foster brothers, realizing with growing dread what they were hinting at. He was the outsider, the one they had always resented. And now, in their desperation, they were starting to think of him as expendable. The air in the room grew heavy as Roran's words hung in the silence. The flickering light from the fireplace cast long shadows on the walls, and Kitonios could feel his heartbeat quicken. He looked around the table, hoping for someone, anyone, to speak up, to dismiss what Roran had just said as nonsense. But no one did. Alira and Gareth exchanged nervous glances but said nothing. They had grown weary from the famine, their spirits crushed under the weight of their struggles. In that moment, Kitonios could see it in their eyes. They were tired, and perhaps even desperate enough to consider something they would never have before. Roran leaned forward, his eyes fixed on Kitonios. "We don't have enough food," he said coldly. "Father knows it, Mother knows it, and we all know it. We can barely feed ourselves, let alone keep a spare mouth around." Kitonios felt a lump form in his throat. He wanted to speak, to defend himself, but his words felt stuck. He had worked just as hard as any of them, but in their eyes, he was still the outsider. Tavin, always the sly one, smiled as if he had come up with the perfect solution. "Perhaps there's another way," he said, his voice soft but filled with a dark undertone. "We don't have to keep him here, do we? Maybe there's somewhere else he could go." Kitonios's heart sank. He had known for years that his foster brothers resented him, but this was different. They were planning something dangerous. And deep down, he knew that they had no intention of simply sending him away. Whatever they had in mind was far worse. Leoric, the youngest brother, looked uneasy. He shifted in his seat, avoiding Kitonios's gaze. He had always followed his older brothers, never truly questioning their actions. But now, he seemed to be struggling with the weight of what they were suggesting. Kitonios finally found his voice, though it was shaky. "I've worked hard, just like the rest of you," he said quietly. "I've done everything I can to help this family. Please don't do this." Roran snorted and leaned back in his chair. "It's not about what you've done, Kitonios. It's about survival. And right now, we need to make some hard choices." Alira opened her mouth to speak, but Gareth placed a hand on her arm, stopping her. "We'll talk about this later," Gareth said, his voice heavy with weariness. "Let's all get some rest." Kitonios stood up from the table, his heart pounding in his chest. He couldn't stay in the room any longer. He needed to get out, to think, to figure out what he would do. Without another word, he walked out the door and into the night. The cold air hit his face as he stepped outside, and he took a deep breath. He had always known that his place in the family was fragile, but he had never imagined that things would come to this. Now, it seemed that his foster brothers were plotting to get rid of him. For good. Over the next few days, the tension in the house grew unbearable. Catonios could feel the weight of his foster brother's eyes on him at every moment, watching him, waiting. He knew they were planning something, but he didn't know when they would act, or how. One evening, when the sun had just dipped below the horizon, and the sky was painted with hues of orange and purple, Roran and Tavin approached Catonios as he was tending to the sheep. They were both smiling, but there was something unsettling about their expressions. "Hey, Catonios," Roran said, his voice unusually friendly. "We've been thinking. We know things have been hard around here, but we've come up with a way to help the family." Catonios looked at them warily. He didn't trust their sudden kindness. "What do you mean?" Tavin stepped forward, placing a hand on Catonios' shoulder. "There's a group of traders passing through the village tonight," he said. "They're looking for workers, strong, young men like you. They'll pay well if you agree to go with them and help out for a while. Could be a good opportunity for you. And for us." Catonios' heart sank. He could hear the unspoken words in Tavin's suggestion. They weren't offering him an opportunity, they were selling him. "I'm not going anywhere," Catonios said, his voice firm. "This is my home." Roran's smile faded, replaced by a hard, cold look. "You don't have a choice, Catonios," he said, stepping closer. "We've already made the deal. The traders are waiting. It's time for you to go." Before Catonios could react, Tavin grabbed him by the arm, his grip tight and unyielding. Roran stepped forward, helping his brother drag Catonios toward the edge of the village, where a group of traders waited by their wagons. Catonios struggled against them, but they were stronger, and their determination was clear. They were going to sell him, whether he liked it or not. As they approached the traders, one of the men, a grizzled old merchant with a scar running down his cheek, stepped forward and eyed Catonios. "This the boy?" he asked, his voice rough. Roran nodded. "Yes. He'll work hard. I promise." The merchant chuckled. "They all say that," he muttered. He tossed a small bag of coins to Roran, who caught it with a satisfied grin. Catonios looked at the traders, then back at his foster brothers, betrayal burning in his chest. "You can't do this," he said, his voice filled with anger and disbelief. But Roran and Tavin didn't respond. They simply turned and walked away, leaving Catonios standing there, surrounded by the traders who would soon take him far from the only home he had ever known. The traders wasted no time. They bound Catonios' hands and shoved him into the back of one of their wagons, where several other young men sat, their faces grim and hopeless. Catonios sat in silence, his heart heavy with anger and sorrow. How could his foster brothers have betrayed him like this? He had spent his whole life trying to prove himself to be a part of their family, and this was how they repaid him. As the wagon jolted forward and began its journey out of Drefer, Catonios looked back at the village. He could see the familiar rooftops, the fields where he had worked, and the distant silhouette of the mountains that had always felt like home. But now, everything seemed distant and unreachable, like a dream slipping away. The journey was long and harsh. The traders moved quickly, stopping only to rest the horses and eat. Catonios barely spoke to the other captives. Most of them were young men like him, taken from their homes by the famine or sold by their families in desperation. They sat in silence, their faces etched with fear and uncertainty. At night, the traders camped by the roadside, and Catonios would lie awake, staring up at the stars, wondering what was going to happen to him. He thought about Mara, his mother, and how heartbroken she would be when she found out what had happened. He wondered if she would ever see him again. Days turned into weeks, and the landscape changed as they traveled farther and farther from Dreifer. The mountains faded into rolling hills, and the air grew warmer as they approached the southern regions. Kotonios had no idea where they were taking him, but the traders spoke often of a distant kingdom, a place called Arcalor. Kotonios didn't know much about Arcalor, but he had heard stories from Orin, the blacksmith. It was a powerful kingdom, ruled by a cold-hearted king who had taken the throne years ago. The kingdom was known for its wealth, but also for its cruelty. Many who were taken there as slaves never returned. As the days dragged on, Kotonios tried to keep his hope alive. He had always been strong, always been a fighter, and he wasn't going to give up now. He just needed to find a way to escape, to break free from the traitors and find his way back home. But with each passing day, that hope grew dimmer. The traitors watched him closely, and there was no chance of slipping away unnoticed. For now, all he could do was wait and pray for a miracle. After what felt like an eternity, the traitors and their captives finally reached the outskirts of Arcalor. The kingdom was vast, with towering stone walls that stretched as far as the eye could see. The city within was bustling with activity. Merchants selling their wares, soldiers patrolling the streets, and citizens hurrying about their daily lives. But there was something dark about Arcalor, a sense of unease that hung in the air. Kotonios was herded off the wagon with the other captives, his hands still bound. He could see the towering palace in the distance, its walls gleaming in the sunlight. This was where the king ruled, the king who had taken the throne through cruelty and cunning. Kotonios had no idea what his fate would be in this strange new kingdom, but he knew one thing: he was no longer free. The traders led the captives through the streets, their destination clear. They were heading for the slave market, a place where men and women were bought and sold like cattle. Kotonios felt a knot tighten in his stomach as they approached the market square. He had heard stories of places like this, but seeing it with his own eyes was far worse than he had ever imagined. As Kotonios stood in the market, waiting to be sold, an old woman caught sight of him. Her name was Sibel, and she was one of the few who remembered the days before the cruel king had taken the throne. She had seen many faces come and go, but something about Kotonios caught her attention. It wasn't just his eyes or his posture. It was a mark, a birthmark on his arm, one that looked familiar. Sibel had seen that mark before, many years ago, on a king who had ruled with kindness and fairness before the current ruler had usurped the throne. Her heart raced as she realized what this could mean. Kotonios wasn't just a slave, he was the rightful heir to the throne of Arcalor. Sibel couldn't stop thinking about the young man she had seen in the slave market. The birthmark on his arm, it was unmistakable. She had seen it many years ago on the arm of the kind King Lorien, the true ruler of Arcalor before Lord Varian had taken over. King Lorien had always worn his mark proudly, as it was said to be a sign from the gods, a mark that only those of royal blood carried. As Sibel walked through the crowded streets of Arcalor, her mind raced with thoughts. Could it be possible that this young man, this slave, was the son of King Lorien? She had heard rumors that the king's child had disappeared years ago, but no one had ever confirmed it. And now, here was this boy, Kotonios, who bore the same mark. Sibel decided she couldn't ignore her suspicions. She had to investigate further. But how? She was just an old woman, living in a city that was now ruled by a cruel lord who had no care for the past. If she wasn't careful, she could get herself into serious trouble. But Sibel had lived a long life, and she knew that some risks were worth taking. She made her way back to her small home in the city and sat by the fire, thinking. There was one person she could turn to, someone who had always been wise and had helped her in the past, Sage Therion. Durayon was an old sage who lived in a quiet part of the kingdom, far from the watchful eyes of Lord Varian's soldiers. If anyone could help her understand the significance of Kitonios's mark, it would be him. Sibel knew she would have to act quickly. The longer she waited, the more likely it was that Kitonios could be sold off to another distant land, and she might lose her chance to uncover the truth. With determination in her heart, she packed a small bag with supplies and prepared for the journey to see Sage Durayon. The next morning, before the sun had fully risen, Sibel set off on her journey. It wasn't a long trip, but it was dangerous. The roads outside the city were often patrolled by Lord Varian's soldiers, and anyone who seemed suspicious or out of place could be questioned, or worse. Sibel kept her head low as she traveled. Her hood pulled over her face to hide her identity. She knew that she couldn't risk being recognized. After several hours of walking, she reached the edge of the city and ventured into the quieter countryside. The air was fresher here, and the birds sang in the trees. For a moment, she felt a sense of peace, but she reminded herself that her mission was far from over. Sage Therion's home was nestled in the hills, hidden away from prying eyes. It was a small stone cottage surrounded by lush greenery. Sibel had visited him many times before, seeking advice and wisdom, and he had always welcomed her with kindness. As Sibel approached the cottage, she could see the smoke rising from the chimney, a sign that Durayon was home. She knocked on the wooden door, and after a moment, the door creaked open. There stood Durayon, an old man with a long white beard and kind, wise eyes. "Sibel," he said, his voice soft but filled with warmth. "What brings you here today, my dear?" Sibel stepped inside and sat by the fire. She didn't waste any time. "I've seen something, Durayon," she began, her voice trembling with both excitement and fear. "I've seen a boy with the mark, the same mark that King Lorien had." Therion's eyes widened with surprise. "The royal mark?" he asked, his tone now serious. "Are you certain?" Sibel nodded. "Yes, I am sure. It's the same mark. The boy's name is Kitonios, and he's been sold into slavery. But I believe he is the king's lost son." Durayon stroked his beard thoughtfully. "If what you say is true, Sibel, then this is no small matter. The rightful heir to the throne may still be alive." Durayon sat in silence for a moment, deep in thought. The fire crackled beside him, casting flickering shadows across the room. Sibel waited anxiously, hoping that the old sage would know what to do. At last, Durayon spoke. "We must not act rashly," he said slowly. "If Lord Varian discovers that the true heir is alive, he will stop at nothing to destroy him. But if this Kitonios is indeed the son of King Lorien, he must know the truth." Sibel nodded. "How do we tell him?" Durayon stood and moved to a shelf lined with old books and scrolls. He carefully selected one and unrolled it on the table. The parchment was ancient, filled with symbols and writings that only a sage like Durayon could understand. "Long ago," Durayon began, "it was written that the royal bloodline of Arcalor would be marked by the gods themselves. The mark you describe is a sign that this boy is of royal descent. But we must be cautious. Kitonios may not even know who he truly is." Sibel's heart raced. She knew the boy was special, but hearing these words from the sage confirmed her deepest suspicions. Kitonios was the true heir to the throne of Arcalor. "We must find him," Durayon said, "and we must do so before anyone else discovers his identity. He is the key to restoring peace to this kingdom." The next day, Sibel and Durayon set out to find Kitonios. They moved quickly through the streets of Arcalor, careful to avoid the soldiers who patrolled the area. Sibel's heart pounded in her chest as they made their way to the slave market, where she had last seen the boy. When they arrived, they found Kitonios being led away by his new owner, a stern-looking merchant. Sibel's stomach churned with worry, but Thurion remained calm. "We must speak to him," Thurion whispered. "But we cannot do so here. It's too dangerous." They followed the merchant and Kitonios from a distance, waiting for the right moment. Finally, after what felt like hours, they saw the merchant stop at a small inn. Sibel and Thurion waited until nightfall, then quietly approached Kitonios. "Kitonios," Sibel whispered, tapping him gently on the shoulder as he sat outside the inn, exhausted from a long day of work. The boy turned, surprised to see the old woman again. "You," he said softly, "why are you here?" Sibel exchanged a glance with Thurion, then said, "There is something important you must know, something about who you really are." Kitonios frowned in confusion. "Who I really am?" Thurion stepped forward. "You carry the mark of the royal family, Kitonios. You are the son of King Lorien, the rightful heir to the throne of Arcalor." Kitonios's eyes widened in disbelief. "What? No, that can't be true. I'm just a boy from Dreifer." Thurion shook his head. "You are far more than that, Kitonios. The mark on your arm is proof. You are the last hope for this kingdom." Kitonios sat in stunned silence, his mind racing. Could it be true? Could he really be the lost son of a king? The boy who had grown up believing he was just a servant, now told that he was destined for greatness. It was almost too much to comprehend. Kitonios didn't sleep that night. He lay awake, staring at the ceiling, his mind swirling with thoughts of everything Sibel and Thurion had told him. It was all so overwhelming. How could he, a simple boy from Dreifer, be the heir to the throne of Arcalor? And if it was true, what was he supposed to do about it? The next morning, Sibel and Thurion met with Kitonios in secret, away from the eyes of the merchants and soldiers. Thurion had brought several old maps and documents, which he spread out on the table in front of them. "We need to plan carefully," Thurion said, his voice steady. "If you are to reclaim the throne, we will need allies and we must move quickly. Lord Varian's grip on this kingdom is strong, but there are those who still remember the days of King Lorien. They will support you if we can reach them." Kitonios stared at the maps, feeling a mixture of fear and excitement. He had never imagined that his life would take such a turn. But now that he knew the truth, there was no turning back. The weight of the responsibility that had been placed on Kitonios' shoulders grew heavier with each passing day. He was still trying to wrap his mind around the fact that he was the rightful heir to the throne, and now, on top of that, he was expected to lead a rebellion against Lord Varian. How could he do such a thing? He was just a boy, or at least he thought of himself as one. Sibel and Thurion, however, believed in him. They assured him that his royal bloodline would give him the strength he needed to succeed. But it was not just strength he needed, it was support. They couldn't do this alone. If Kitonios was to have any chance of reclaiming the throne, he would need allies. "Many of the people still remember your father's reign," Sibel told him as they sat around a small table, hidden away in a quiet part of the city. "He was a good king, kind, fair, and just. There are still those who are loyal to the royal bloodline, though they have gone into hiding since Varian took power." Thurion nodded in agreement. "The first thing we must do is find these people. They will help us. We need to build an army, and we need to do it quietly, without alerting Varian's forces." "But how do we find them?" Kitonios asked, feeling uncertain. Thurion unrolled a map of the kingdom, pointing to several key locations. "There are villages and towns across the land where your father's name is still spoken with reverence. We will start there. Some of the old knights who once served him may still be alive, and they would be powerful allies if we can convince them to join us." Kitonios stared at the map. The kingdom was vast, and the task seemed nearly impossible. But Sibel and Thurion were right. If they didn't try, they would never know who was still out there, waiting for the rightful king to return. "We will send messages in secret," Sibel said, her voice filled with determination. "We will find those who remain loyal to your family." Kotonios knew that in order to succeed in reclaiming the throne, he would need to do more than just gather allies. He would also need to prepare himself. He had spent much of his life as a servant doing menial tasks, but he had never been trained as a warrior. If he was to lead a rebellion, he would need to learn how to fight. The Rayon arranged for a trusted old soldier named Garin to train Kotonios in the art of combat. Garin had once served as a knight under King Lorien and had been one of the most skilled swordsmen in the kingdom. He had gone into hiding after Lord Varian took power, but now, hearing of Kotonios' true identity, he had agreed to help. The first day of training was grueling. Garin wasted no time, putting Kotonios through a series of exercises to test his strength and agility. Kotonios stumbled and fell more times than he could count, his arms aching and his legs trembling from the strain. But Garin was patient. "Don't worry, lad," Garin said with a kind smile. "You've got a lot to learn, but you've got the heart of a fighter. We'll make a warrior out of you yet." Day after day, Kotonios trained with Garin. He learned how to wield a sword, how to defend himself with a shield, and how to move swiftly and silently in battle. At first, it seemed impossible. His muscles ached, and his hands were covered in blisters. But slowly, he began to improve. He became stronger, quicker, and more confident. But it wasn't just physical strength that Garin taught him. He also taught Kotonios about leadership. "Being a king isn't just about being the strongest fighter," Garin said one evening as they rested after a long day of training. "It's about knowing how to lead people, how to inspire them. You must show your people that you care for them, that you're willing to fight for them. That's what makes a true king." Kotonios listened carefully, taking in every word. He was starting to realize that reclaiming the throne wasn't just about defeating Lord Varian. It was about becoming the kind of leader his father had been, the kind of leader who could bring peace and justice back to the kingdom. As Kotonios continued his training, Sibel and Thrayon worked behind the scenes to gather information about Lord Varian. They knew that in order to succeed, they needed to know as much as possible about their enemy, his strengths, his weaknesses, and his plans. Sibel had always been skilled at blending into the background, unnoticed by those around her. She moved through the city, listening to conversations in the markets, eavesdropping on soldiers as they spoke of Lord Varian's plans, and gathering whispers from those who had once served in the palace. Little by little, she pieced together valuable information about Varian's forces. Thrayon, on the other hand, relied on his network of contacts. As a sage, he had friends and allies scattered throughout the kingdom, people who were loyal to the royal bloodline and who were willing to help in secret. These contacts provided Thrayon with detailed reports on Varian's movements, his alliances, and his plans to tighten his grip on the kingdom. One evening, Sibel and Thrayon met with Kotonios to share what they had learned. "Lord Varian is preparing for war," Sibel said, her face grim. "He knows that there are those who still oppose him, and he is gathering his forces to crush any rebellion before it can begin." Thrayon nodded. "But we have learned something that may give us an advantage. Varian's soldiers are well trained, but many of them are only loyal because they fear him. If we can find a way to turn some of them to our side, we may be able to weaken his army." Kotonios listened carefully. It was a dangerous plan, but it could work. If they could convince even a small portion of Varian's soldiers to join their cause, it could tip the scales in their favor. Sibel, Thrayon, and Kotonios worked tirelessly to build a coalition of allies. Messages were sent out to villages and towns across the kingdom, calling for those who remained loyal to King Lorien to come forward and join the cause. Slowly but surely, people began to respond. In a small village to the north, an old knight named Sir Aemon stepped forward. He had fought alongside King Lorien many years ago and had been devastated when Lord Varian took the throne. When he received word that the king's son was still alive, he knew he had to help. In another town, a group of farmers and blacksmiths banded together, determined to fight for the rightful heir. They were not trained soldiers, but they were willing to fight for what was right. As more and more people joined their cause, the coalition began to grow. They trained in secret, preparing for the day when they would face Lord Varian's forces. Cotonios found himself surrounded by people who believed in him, people who were willing to risk their lives to see him on the throne. But there was still much work to be done. They needed more allies, more weapons, and more time to prepare. Lord Varian's army was powerful, and they would not be easy to defeat. One night, as Cotonios and his allies were making plans for the next stage of their rebellion, a scout came rushing into the camp, breathless and wide-eyed with fear. "Lord Varian's soldiers," the scout gasped. "They're coming, right now. They've found us." Panic spread through the camp like wildfire. Cotonios's heart raced as he looked around at the faces of his friends and allies. They were not ready for this. They had been training, but they were not yet fully prepared to face Varian's forces in open battle. "We have to fight," Cotonios said, his voice steady despite the fear that gripped him. "We cannot run. If we run, they will hunt us down. We must stand and fight." Garen, the old knight who had been training Cotonios, stepped forward. "He's right. We must fight. But we can't engage them head-on. We'll have to be smart about this. Use the terrain to our advantage." Cotonios nodded. "We'll set traps along the forest path. We'll draw them into the woods, where their numbers won't matter as much. We can do this." With no time to lose, Cotonios and his allies quickly prepared for the battle. They set traps along the path leading into the forest, positioning themselves in the trees and underbrush, ready to ambush the enemy. As the first wave of Varian soldiers marched into the forest, Cotonios held his breath. The skirmish was about to begin. As the dust settled from the skirmish with Lord Varian's soldiers, Cotonios and his allies gathered to discuss their next steps. The small victory had given them hope, but it had also reminded them of the strength of their enemy. If they were to reclaim Arcalor, they needed a solid plan, one that would take every advantage into account. They convened in a hidden glade deep in the woods, surrounded by towering trees that provided cover from prying eyes. Sibel, Thurion, Cotonios, Garen, and several of the new allies gathered around a large map spread out on the ground. It showed the layout of Arcalor and the surrounding areas, along with key locations that could be vital in their struggle. "We must be strategic," Thurion began, pointing to various locations on the map. "Arcalor is a fortified city. It will not be easy to penetrate its defenses, especially now that Varian is aware of our presence." Garen nodded in agreement. "We need to disrupt their supply lines and weaken their defenses before we make a full assault. If we can cut off their food and reinforcements, it will make our job much easier." Sibel looked thoughtfully at the map. "What about the old tunnels? They were used in the past for trade, and they could allow us to sneak into the city undetected." Cotonios's eyes lit up. "That's a brilliant idea, Sibel. If we can enter the city through the tunnels, we can surprise Varian soldiers and create chaos from within." As the group discussed their options, they began to formulate a detailed plan. They would split their forces into smaller groups, sending some to disrupt supply lines and others to scout the old tunnels. The main force would prepare for an assault from the outside, while Cotonios would lead a small team through the tunnels. "Timing will be crucial," Thurion reminded them. "We need to coordinate our efforts so that Varian's forces are overwhelmed on multiple fronts." The group worked late into the night, outlining every detail of their plan. They felt a surge of excitement and determination. With each passing moment, Kitonios could feel the weight of responsibility lift off his shoulders. He was no longer just a boy, he was a leader, and together they were ready to reclaim their kingdom. As they finalized their plans, Thurion called for everyone's attention. "There is something else I must share with you," he said, his voice grave. "It is about a prophecy that speaks of the true heir of Arcalor." The air in the glade grew still as everyone turned to Thurion, curious and anxious. "Long ago," he began, "it was foretold that the blood of the rightful king would return to Arcalor in its darkest hour. This king would rise up to reclaim the throne and bring peace back to the land." Kitonios felt a shiver run down his spine. "But how does this prophecy relate to me?" he asked. Thurion continued, "The prophecy describes a boy born under a rare celestial event, one that happens only once every 100 years. This boy would bear a mark that symbolizes his lineage, and he would unite the people against their oppressors. You, Kitonios, are that boy." The revelation hung in the air, and Kitonios's heart raced. The weight of his destiny was heavier than he had imagined. He looked at his friends, who stared back with a mix of awe and belief. They had faith in him, and now the prophecy made it clear that he had a larger purpose. "But how do we fulfill this prophecy?" Kitonios asked, determination flooding his voice. "We must act with courage and wisdom," Thurion replied. "We will need to inspire the people of Arcalor to believe in you. They must see you not only as their king, but also as the embodiment of hope." As the group discussed how to share this message with the people, Kitonios felt a renewed sense of purpose. He was no longer just fighting for himself. He was fighting for a future that could fulfill the prophecy and bring about the change Arcalor desperately needed. Despite the excitement surrounding the prophecy, doubts lingered within Kitonios's allies. As they prepared for their mission, whispers of uncertainty echoed through the camp. Some began to question whether Kitonios was truly the one destined to lead them. One evening, as they gathered to discuss their strategy, a young knight named Ryland stood up. "I'm not sure about this," he said, his voice trembling. "What if the prophecy is just a story? What if Kitonios is just an ordinary boy?" The murmurs of agreement rippled through the group. Kitonios felt a pang of disappointment, but he understood their fears. They had all suffered under Varian's rule, and the thought of putting their trust in a young boy was daunting. "I understand your doubts," Kitonios said, standing tall despite his feelings of uncertainty. "But I believe in our cause. I believe in what we can achieve together. The prophecy may not guarantee victory, but it gives us hope. And hope is powerful. But hope alone isn't enough," Ryland countered. "We need a proven leader, someone who has experience in battle." "What if you fail?" Garen stepped forward, his voice firm. "We all have doubts, but we must unite behind Kitonios. He is our rightful king, and he has shown courage. If we falter now, we risk losing everything." Sibel nodded. "We must remember why we fight. We fight for our families, our friends, and for the future of Arcalor. Kitonios has already proven himself by leading us in the skirmish against Varian's forces." With tensions still high, they began to discuss their plans once more, but Kitonios could feel the unease in the air. It was a heavy burden to bear, but he was determined to earn the trust of his allies. He needed to prove to them that he was more than just a boy. He was their leader. The next day, as the sun rose over the horizon, the plan to disrupt Lord Varian's operations began. Kitonios, Sibel, Thurion, and a small group of brave warriors set out to carry out their mission. They decided to target the supply wagons that brought food and weapons to Varian's soldiers. If they could disrupt these supplies, it would weaken Varian's forces and give their coalition a better chance in the upcoming battle. Under the cover of darkness, they moved stealthily through the woods, heading toward a road that led to Arcalor. The sound of wooden wheels creaking and horses' hooves echoed in the night as they waited for the first wagon to arrive. As they lay in wait, Katonios felt a surge of adrenaline. He was nervous but determined. He knew this was an important step in their plan. When the first wagon appeared, they sprang into action. The warriors rushed from their hiding spots, shouting to startle the drivers. Katonios led the charge, his heart pounding as he faced the surprised soldiers guarding the wagon. They fought fiercely, and Katonios was surprised at how quickly he was adapting to the chaos of battle. With a swift movement, he dodged an incoming blow and struck back, helping to take down the guards. Sibel and Durion worked together, using their knowledge of the land to outsmart the soldiers. They quickly disabled the wagons, spilling the supplies onto the ground. Katonios felt a sense of triumph as they accomplished their mission, but he knew this was just the beginning. They had to remain vigilant, as Varian's forces would not take this disruption lightly. Word of Katonios's bravery and the coalition's mission began to spread. People in the surrounding villages started to hear about the boy who fought against Lord Varian's soldiers. The tales of their actions inspired hope in the hearts of those who had lost faith in the kingdom. Sibel and Durion devised a plan to win the hearts of Arcalor's people. They organized gatherings in secret, where they spoke of the prophecy and the return of the rightful king. They shared stories of King Lorien's reign, reminding everyone of the peace and prosperity that had once flourished in the kingdom. At each gathering, Katonios spoke passionately about his vision for the future of Arcalor. "We are not just fighting for a throne," he would say. "We are fighting for our families, for our homes, and for a brighter tomorrow. Together, we can reclaim our kingdom and bring back the values that once defined us." As the people began to rally behind him, Katonios felt a warmth spread through his heart. The fear and doubt that had plagued him began to fade as he realized that he was not alone in this fight. With every gathering, more people joined their cause. Farmers, merchants, and even some soldiers who had grown tired of Varian's cruelty. The momentum grew stronger, and soon their coalition became a force to be reckoned with. They were no longer just a small group of rebels. They were a movement, united under the banner of hope and the rightful heir to the throne. With their numbers growing and public support on their side, the time had come to begin the siege of Arcalor. Katonios and his allies gathered one last time to finalize their plans. The air was charged with anticipation, and everyone was ready to fight for their future. As the sun rose, casting a golden light over the kingdom, Katonios felt a mix of excitement and fear. They had trained hard and prepared for this moment, but the reality of the situation weighed heavily on him. He would be leading the charge into battle against Lord Varian's forces. Garen stepped forward, rallying the troops with his commanding voice. "Today, we fight not just for ourselves but for every soul in Arcalor who has suffered under Varian's rule. We fight for our king, Katonios." The troops cheered, their voices echoing through the valley. Katonios felt a rush of energy as he raised his sword high, the sunlight glinting off the blade. "For Arcalor," he shouted, his heart swelling with pride. They moved toward the city, marching in formation and chanting slogans that echoed their determination. As they approached Arcalor, the sight of its towering walls loomed before them, a daunting reminder of the challenge they faced. Katonios took a deep breath, focusing on the task ahead. They positioned themselves strategically around the city, cutting off escape routes and gathering intelligence on Varian's defenses. They had prepared for this moment, and now it was time to put their plan into action. As the sun began to set, the first major battle commenced. Katonios and his forces stormed the gates of Arcalor, their battle cries ringing out as they clashed with Varian's soldiers. The sound of swords clanging and shields crashing filled the air, creating a chaotic symphony of war. Kitonios fought fiercely, remembering all the training he had endured. He moved with purpose, dodging attacks and striking down foes. The adrenaline coursed through his veins, fueling his determination. He was not just fighting for himself. He was fighting for everyone who believed in him. Sibel fought valiantly alongside him, using her agility to weave in and out of the fray. She shouted encouragement to their allies, rallying them to press on. Durion provided support from the back lines, using his magic to protect their soldiers and create barriers against the enemy. But the battle was not without its challenges. Varian's forces were well-trained and fought fiercely to defend their city. Kitonios felt the weight of leadership pressing down on him as he witnessed both victories and losses among his troops. He knew he had to remain strong, but the reality of war was brutal. Just as they seemed to be gaining ground, a loud horn blared from the city gates, signaling the arrival of reinforcements for Varian. Kitonios's heart sank as he realized they were outnumbered. They needed to regroup and strategize quickly. The first major battle ended in chaos. Kitonios and his allies fought valiantly, but the unexpected reinforcements from Varian's forces turned the tide against them. The retreat was ordered, and they fell back to regroup, nursing their wounds and counting their losses. Sibel, Durion, and Garen helped to tend to the injured, while Kitonios sat quietly, overwhelmed by the events of the day. They had fought hard, but the weight of their losses hung heavy in the air. "We did our best," Sibel said gently as she cleaned a wound on Kitonios's arm. "We'll regroup and come back stronger. We can't lose hope. But how can we keep going after this?" Kitonios asked, his voice filled with uncertainty. "What if we fail again?" Garen knelt beside him, placing a hand on his shoulder. "Every battle teaches us something. We will learn from this and we will grow stronger. True leaders rise after defeat." As they rested and recovered, Kitonios reflected on the battle. He realized that it was not just about winning. It was about resilience and unity. They had faced a setback, but they could not let it define their cause. Together, they would find a way to move forward. Just as they began to regain their strength, an unexpected betrayal rocked their coalition. A trusted ally, a soldier named Marcus, had been secretly working with Lord Varian. In the chaos of battle, he had fed information to the enemy about their strategies and troop movements. Sibel was the first to uncover the betrayal when she overheard a conversation between Marcus and a soldier from Varian's camp. Shocked, she rushed to warn Kitonios and the others. "This is a serious blow," Durion said, his face filled with concern. "We must act quickly to contain the damage. We cannot allow Varian to exploit this information." Kitonios felt a mix of anger and betrayal. "How could he do this? We trusted him." "We need to confront him," Garen said firmly. "We must find out how much he has told them and what our next steps should be." As they planned their confrontation, Kitonios felt a sense of resolve. He would not let this betrayal tear them apart. They had to stay united and find a way to turn this setback into an advantage. When they confronted Marcus, he was taken by surprise. "You don't understand," he pleaded. "Varian promised me power and wealth. I thought it would help our cause." "You were wrong," Kitonios said, his voice steady. "You put us all in danger. You must choose a side now. Will you stand with us or face the consequences of your betrayal?" After dealing with the betrayal, Kitonios knew it was essential to rally his troops and reinforce their morale. The betrayal had shaken the foundations of their coalition, and they needed to come together now more than ever. He called for a gathering in a clearing near their camp. As the sun set, casting a warm glow over the faces of his allies, he stood before them, heart pounding with a mix of fear and determination. "I know we have faced challenges and losses," Kitonios began, his voice echoing through the trees. But we are not alone in this fight. We are a family united by a common cause. The betrayal of one does not define us. It only strengthens our resolve. He looked into the eyes of each soldier, feeling the weight of their hopes resting on his shoulders. We fight not just for ourselves, but for the future of Arcalore. We are the ones who will bring back justice, hope, and peace. Together, we can overcome any obstacle that stands in our way. As he spoke, he saw the fire reignite in their eyes. He could feel the energy shift, and the tension that had filled the air began to dissipate. His allies cheered, rallying behind him once more, ready to face whatever challenges lay ahead. With renewed determination, they set their sights on the future, prepared to reclaim their kingdom and fulfill the prophecy that had brought them together. As dawn broke over the horizon, painting the sky in hues of pink and orange, Kotonios gathered his allies for the final planning session before the decisive battle against Lord Varian. They had come a long way, facing many challenges, and now it was time to put their plan into action. The gathering took place in a hidden glen, surrounded by tall trees that shielded them from view. Kotonios stood at the center, his heart racing with anticipation. He looked around at the faces of his friends, Sibel, Virion, Garen, and the other warriors. They had trained hard, and their determination showed in their eyes. "We fought bravely to get to this point," Kotonios began, his voice strong and steady. "Now we must come together one last time to reclaim our kingdom. Today we will not just fight for ourselves, but for the future of Arcalore." Sibel stepped forward, pointing to a map of the palace spread out on a table. "Our plan is to infiltrate the palace at dawn while the guards are changing shifts. This is our best chance to catch them off guard." Garen nodded in agreement. "Once we're inside, we'll split into two teams. One team will secure the throne room, while the other will distract Varian's forces outside. We need to create chaos so we can take control." Thurion added, "I can use my magic to shield our movements, making it harder for the guards to see us. We must remain quiet and swift to ensure success." Kotonios felt a surge of confidence as he listened to his friends strategizing. "We must also remember that Varian will not be an easy opponent. He will fight fiercely to keep his throne. We must stay focused and united." As they continued to discuss the details, Kotonios felt the weight of responsibility on his shoulders. He was determined to lead his friends into battle, knowing that the fate of Arcalore rested in their hands. They had trained hard, learned from their previous battles, and now it was time to put their plan into action. With the sun rising behind them, they finalized their strategy. They would move quietly through the city, avoiding detection, and seize the opportunity to reclaim the throne once and for all. As the first rays of sunlight streamed through the trees, Kotonios and his allies prepared for the final confrontation. They donned their armor, checking their weapons and ensuring they were ready for the challenges ahead. The atmosphere was charged with anticipation as they set out toward the palace, hearts pounding in unison. Sibel led the way, her keen senses alert for any signs of danger. They moved through the winding streets of Arcalore, cloaked in the shadows, and the city was eerily quiet. The residents had either fled or were hiding, knowing that a battle was about to erupt. As they reached the palace gates, Kotonios could see the guards changing shifts. This was their moment. They positioned themselves behind a cluster of trees, waiting for the right opportunity to slip inside. "Now," Kotonios whispered as the guards turned their backs and they darted through the gates. The grand palace loomed before them, its majestic towers reaching toward the sky. But there was no time to admire its beauty. They had a mission to complete. Inside the palace, the halls were adorned with lavish decorations, but the air felt heavy with tension. Kotonios led the group through the corridors, their footsteps silent against the marble floors. They had to be cautious, as Varian's guards could be lurking around any corner. Sibel paused, her ears perked up. "I hear voices," she whispered, pointing to a doorway. They crept closer and peeked inside to see a group of guards chatting, unaware of the approaching danger. Cotonios motioned for his team to hold back. "Let's take them by surprise. We can't let them raise the alarm." With a determined nod, they prepared to strike. As they burst into the room, chaos erupted. The guards were caught off guard, and Cotonios fought with all his might. Sibel darted around the room, using her agility to evade attacks, while their Ion cast spells to protect them from harm. In just a few moments, they had subdued the guards and secured the area. Cotonios felt a rush of triumph. They were one step closer to reclaiming the throne. With the guards taken care of, Cotonios and his allies pressed deeper into the palace. The thrill of battle surged through them as they moved swiftly from room to room, searching for Varian and his loyalists. Each corner they turned felt like a step closer to destiny. As they reached the main hall, Cotonios could hear the sounds of battle echoing in the distance. Their allies outside were engaged in fierce combat with Varian's forces, and he knew they had to act quickly. "Let's go," Cotonios urged, leading his team toward the throne room. The grand double doors loomed ahead, adorned with intricate carvings of past kings. This was it, the place where he would confront his destiny. As they pushed open the doors, a fierce battle raged before them. Varian's soldiers clashed with their own, and the chaos was palpable. Cotonios took a deep breath, steeling himself for what lay ahead. With a loud battle cry, he charged into the fray, sword raised high. The clash of metal filled the air as they fought valiantly against the enemy. Cotonios moved with purpose, his heart fueled by the hope of reclaiming his kingdom. Sibel fought by his side, her quick reflexes keeping her one step ahead of danger. Durion unleashed spells that illuminated the darkened hall, empowering their allies and weakening Varian's forces. Garen rallied the troops, encouraging them to push forward and reclaim their home. In the heat of battle, Cotonios felt a surge of determination. Each swing of his sword was fueled by the memories of his past, the pain of loss, the struggles of his journey, and the vision of a brighter future for Arcalor. He would not back down. With every enemy soldier they defeated, their forces grew bolder. They fought with everything they had, united in their cause. The tide of the battle began to turn, and hope sparked in the hearts of those fighting for justice. Amidst the chaos, Cotonios finally caught sight of Lord Varian. The former king stood at the center of the hall, a wicked grin on his face as he commanded his remaining forces. It was time for the ultimate confrontation. With a determined heart, Cotonios pushed through the crowd, determination burning in his chest. He knew this was the moment he had been preparing for all along. As he approached Varian, the room seemed to hush, and the focus shifted to their impending clash. "Ah, the little prince returns," Varian sneered, drawing his sword with a flourish. "Did you really think you could take back what is mine?" "I am not just a prince," Cotonios declared, his voice strong. "I am the rightful heir of Arcalor, and this kingdom will no longer suffer under your tyranny." With a fierce battle cry, Cotonios lunged at Varian, their swords clashing in a shower of sparks. The tension in the air was electric as they engaged in a fierce duel, the sounds of battle fading into the background. Varian was a skilled swordsman, and Cotonios found himself struggling to keep up. But he remembered the training he had undergone, the lessons from Durion, and the support of his allies. He would not falter. With every strike, he pushed back against Varian's wickedness, channeling the strength of his friends and the hope of the people of Arcalor. The fight raged on, each moment more intense than the last. Kotonios began to gain the upper hand, his movements growing more fluid and confident. He remembered the words of his allies. They believed in him and he would not let them down. The battle between Kotonios and Lord Varian raged on, each warrior pushing themselves to their limits. With each clash of their swords, the outcome of the kingdom hung in the balance. Kotonios felt the weight of responsibility bearing down on him, but he pushed through the pain and fatigue. Finally, with a swift maneuver, Kotonios managed to disarm Varian, sending his sword clattering to the ground. "It's over, Varian," he shouted, his heart racing. "You will no longer rule over Arcalor." But Varian, desperate to hold on to his power, pulled a hidden dagger from his belt and lunged at Kotonios. In that split second, time seemed to slow. Kotonios instinctively raised his arm to defend himself, and the dagger sliced across his skin. A sharp pain shot through him, but he didn't falter. Fueled by the pain and the memories of everything he had fought for, he quickly retaliated, tackling Varian to the ground. With one final blow, Kotonios struck Varian down. The room fell silent as the realization of victory washed over them. But the cost was evident. Kotonios felt the warmth of blood trickling down his arm, and the exhaustion from the battle weighed heavily on him. Sibel rushed to his side, concern etched on her face. "You're hurt," she exclaimed, her hands trembling as she inspected his wound. "We need to get you help." "I'll be fine," Kotonios replied, his voice steady but tired. "We have to ensure the safety of Arcalor first." As the last remnants of Varian's forces were defeated, Kotonios realized that victory had come at a price. They had lost many brave souls in the battle, and the reality of war began to sink in. It was a bittersweet moment, filled with triumph and sorrow. In the aftermath of the battle, the hall was filled with a mix of triumph and mourning. Kotonios stood among his allies, looking around at the faces of those who had fought beside him. Some were celebrating their victory, but many were grieving for those who had fallen. The grand throne room, once filled with opulence, was now marred by the scars of battle. Broken furniture, shattered glass, and the remnants of the conflict lay scattered about. Kotonios felt the weight of the losses pressing down on him, and he knew they had to come together to heal. Sibel moved to his side, her expression somber. "We have won the battle, but we must now focus on rebuilding," she said gently. "Our people need us more than ever." Kotonios nodded, feeling the burden of leadership on his shoulders. "We must honor those we lost by creating a better future for Arcalor. We will rebuild, and we will make this kingdom stronger." Thryon approached, his voice steady. "I will help heal the injured and use my magic to restore what we can. Together, we can bring hope back to our people." With renewed determination, Kotonios rallied his allies. They began organizing efforts to tend to the wounded and support the families of those who had sacrificed their lives for the cause. The spirit of unity that had fueled their fight for freedom now became the foundation for their recovery. As they worked together, Kotonios felt a sense of purpose returning. He knew that they had a long road ahead, but with the support of his friends and the hope of the people of Arcalor, they would rise again. As the days passed, Kotonios and his allies worked tirelessly to restore order to the kingdom of Arcalor. The once thriving streets were now filled with rubble, but hope began to bloom anew as the people united to rebuild their home. Kotonios traveled from village to village, speaking to the residents and assuring them that their voices would be heard. He listened to their concerns and promised to address their needs, fostering a sense of trust and collaboration. Sibel organized groups of volunteers to help clear debris and rebuild homes. She inspired the people with her unwavering spirit, and soon, everyone was working together to restore what had been lost. The bond between the community grew stronger as they came together to support one another. Durayon used his magical abilities to assist in the healing process. He healed the wounded and brought hope to those who had suffered. The people began to see him not just as a sage, but as a true leader who cared for their well-being. As the kingdom slowly returned to life, Kotonios held town hall meetings to involve the citizens in decision-making. He wanted them to feel empowered and know that their voices mattered in shaping the future of Arcalore. "We are all in this together," Kotonios proclaimed at one of the meetings. "Your opinions and ideas are essential. We will create a kingdom that is just and fair for everyone." The people responded with enthusiasm, and a renewed sense of purpose filled the air. They began to believe that their contributions would help shape the new Arcalore, one built on unity and justice. With the kingdom healing and the people rallying around their new leader, the time had come for Kotonios to be crowned king. The day of the coronation was filled with excitement and anticipation, as everyone gathered in the grand hall of the palace to witness the historic moment. The hall was adorned with vibrant banners and flowers, symbolizing hope and new beginnings. The air buzzed with chatter as the citizens filled the space, their faces reflecting a mix of joy and nervousness. This was a day they had all waited for, a day to celebrate their victory and the dawn of a new era. As Kotonios stood before the assembled crowd, he felt a mix of pride and humility. He was ready to take on the responsibilities that came with the crown, knowing that he would lead with compassion and fairness. Sibel stood by his side, her eyes shining with pride. Durayon and Garen were also present, ready to support their friend on this momentous occasion. Together, they had faced countless challenges, and now they stood united for a brighter future. The ceremony began with the high priest calling forth Kotonios. As he knelt before the altar, the weight of the crown was placed upon his head. The crowd erupted into cheers, their voices filling the hall with celebration. Kotonios stood tall, his heart swelling with emotion as he looked out at the faces of his people. "I vow to protect and serve the kingdom of Arcalore," he declared, his voice strong and unwavering. "Together, we will build a future that is bright and full of hope for every citizen." As he spoke, the crowd cheered, their voices ringing with approval. In that moment, Kotonios felt the bond between him and the people grow stronger. He was not just their king. He was a symbol of their unity and resilience. After the coronation, Kotonios focused on unifying the kingdom. He knew that the scars of war would take time to heal, and he wanted to ensure that every citizen felt included in the rebuilding process. He set out on a mission to visit every corner of Arcalore, fostering a sense of community and togetherness. Kotonios traveled to villages and towns, meeting with the people and listening to their stories. He encouraged open dialogue, allowing everyone to share their thoughts and ideas. "Together, we can create a kingdom where everyone feels valued," he would say, inspiring hope and unity. Sibel joined him on these journeys, sharing her vision for a better future. She organized community events that brought people together, fostering friendships and rebuilding trust among those who had been divided during Varian's rule. Durayon continued to use his magic to heal the land and its people, performing rituals that restored balance and harmony. The once damaged landscapes began to flourish again, and the spirit of the kingdom slowly returned. Garen played a vital role in ensuring that the kingdom remained safe. He worked tirelessly to establish a new guard, training young recruits who were eager to protect their home. "We must stand united against any threat," he would tell them, instilling a sense of pride and duty. As the months passed, Kotonios witnessed the transformation of Arcalore. The people began to come together, realizing that their shared experiences had forged a bond that could not be broken. They were not just citizens of a kingdom, they were a family. As Kotonios looked over the kingdom from the balcony of the palace, He felt a sense of fulfillment and hope. The sun was setting, casting a warm glow over the land, and he could see families gathering in the streets, celebrating their newfound freedom. "A new beginning is upon us," he thought, his heart swelling with pride for his people. They had faced adversity together, and now they were ready to embrace a brighter future. Cotonios turned to Sibel, who stood beside him, her eyes sparkling with excitement. "Look at what we've accomplished," she said, her voice filled with joy. "The people are coming together in ways I never imagined possible." "It's because of their strength and resilience," Cotonios replied, feeling a sense of gratitude for his allies and the citizens of Arcalor. "We have all played a part in rebuilding this kingdom." As they watched the festivities unfold, Cotonios envisioned a future filled with hope, justice, and unity. He knew that there would still be challenges ahead, but together, they would overcome anything that came their way. "We will continue to honor those we lost," he promised, his voice steady. "Their sacrifices will never be forgotten, and we will ensure that Arcalor thrives for generations to come." With the sun dipping below the horizon, painting the sky in vibrant colors, Cotonios felt a sense of peace wash over him. He was ready to lead Arcalor into a new chapter, one filled with promise and possibility.